Hello and welcome back to the Bitter End podcast, where it is hard to come up with a pun for the intro gag around the word phantasm.
Tom, I'm having a total fantgasm. Don't mind me.
Oh, okay. All right, fine. Okay. Well, some people just, it comes easier than others. Obviously, Mr. Todd Jordan.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Tom Denny, because yes, we are here today to talk about Phantasm 2 from 1988. That is 9 years on the back of the roller coaster thrill ride debut Phantasm from Mr. Don Coscarelli. Now,
my gosh,
we have just watched the trailer.
We did. And who doggy, like, so, you know, we were in to Phantasm 1, the tall man talls again.
I certainly was.
I'm very excited for this. The trailer looks pretty banging.
Well, it simultaneously looks like more of the same.
Yeah.
In a way that I like.
Yeah.
All of the hits are there. It says, the ball is back.
Yeah, and you've got the murder ball.
Silver murder ball going around. You've got the big lad, the tall man.
The tall man. You've got, what's his name? The ice cream guy with the ponytail is back.
He's back. I don't know if I necessarily saw, was it Michael? Was he the boy?
Yeah, but I mean, 9 years have passed. There is a young man, which I assume is going to be him. So nice return. Characters, it says we're returning to the cemetery and all that. Like, odd thing at the beginning.
Phantasm, the delusion of a disordered mind, a phantom, a spirit, a ghost.
Not Aliens and Dune, then.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That, you know, it's like, but they went to like a crazy alien planet and stuff. If they're going to kind of go like, it's ghosts in it. It's like, unless it's like a planet where ghosts go. Because I want that more of that sort of sci-fi kind of edge.
And that was distinctly absent from the trailer. Now, I'd understand if they want to hold that back, maybe.
But yeah.
You and I both wanted them to sort of properly get to the planet and walk around and see all of the miniature corpse slaves that they're using to build all their crazy alien pyramids and stuff. Yeah. Now that was in the trailer, maybe they're holding it back. Although that said, even after Phantasm 2, there's three more movies.
Yeah. I mean, and also in this, there is a bit with the tall man saying, like, you think you go to heaven when you die, you come to us. So I think, you know, it's cool. We're going to get a little bit more lore about what up with that tall man, though.
Yeah, why so tall,
though? Why is he so tall, though? Why are his trousers so short? I mean, I'm in.
I'm in.
Yeah.
All right, Tommy. Well, on that note, maybe we should play that old chestnut of a game, that old rootin' tootin' IMDb guessing game.
Yee-haw!
Thomas Denny, can I remind you that Phantasm 1 from 1979 scored a 6.8 on IMDb.
That's very respectable.
Very respectable. And it holds up.
Yep.
So 9 years later, 1988, Phantasm 2, what do you think that got?
I mean, the lore of films, it's going to rate a little bit lower, but I think that this looks like it's still going to be another right old romp. The trailer looks like it's given us what we want. I'm going to say 6.5.
Bang on!
I got one! I fucking got one!
High five.
I got one! 10 seasons, and I finally got one. Ooh. I'm feeling fantasmic!
Nice.
Something like that. I did one, yes.
Now, Tom, I like murder.
Do you?
Not as much as I like balls.
Yes.
And when you put those two together...
What do you get?
A murder ball and a heck of a good time. Let me tell you that I had a ball with Phantasm 2.
It's a hoot and a holler, folks.
Yeah, it's different. I mean, it's not quite as good, but like the bits that are good are pretty fucking out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's still got some the first one had like the merciless edit that they'd done to it meant that there's some shit that doesn't make sense. And there is things in this where stuff happens and you're kind of like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. This is quite weird. But you don't really mind because like it's a ride and it takes you some places. Yes.
So where are some of these places that we're taken?
Well, we're going to start with like banging soundtrack.
It's so tense.
It's really good soundtrack on this film once again. Yeah, the soundtrack's banging. We kick off this film with a whole new character, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Reynolds. Now, she's got visions, and she can see everything that's happened with Mike and the Tall Man and all the events of the previous movie.
Yeah, she's been sketching it out in her exposition diary that she's got. She kind of acts as like a recap of what happened at the end of the last film.
And what was that, Tom?
We had Mike and you had Reggie the ice cream man, Mr. Whippy himself with the ponytail when they were having their romantic chat in front of a roaring fireplace. And then they were like, we're going to go on the road. And then the tall man comes up and grabs Michael, like a jump scare at the end. Like a dwarf, one of his little like minions, pulls Michael through a mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of like, oh, what happened? It's quite cool that we like pick up right where we left off and find out exactly what happened. Like, there's no kind of like, you know, like, oh man, wasn't it crazy when we escaped from the tall man like 10 years ago? It's like, no, we're going to see what fucking happens. And it's a fucking stonking opener.
It's weird though, because the guy that played Reggie is 10 years older and looks it. But they obviously don't have the guy who played Mike, who was like 13 at the time.
So Michael, young Michael, gets knocked out by this little goblin guy.
You never see his face.
Yeah, you never see his face. Everything else is really recreated pretty like faithfully from like how everything was in the original film. So Michael's been knocked out, and the tall man and his little goblins are trying to spirit him away, while Reggie gets attacked by another little goblin. And it's fucking gnarly, because it's got this... you didn't really see their faces properly.
No.
Or when you did, it was their mate in the last one. And he looked fine. He just looked like their mate. But in this, their faces are all, like, smooshed up and, like, gnarly
and gross. They're so rank. Yeah, they look like little raisins. Evil raisins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like Reggie just basically starts kicking the shit out of this little goblin guy.
It's really good. He's got a shotgun, but he can't find the bullets, and so he just fucking just pummels him with the butt of the shotgun.
Yeah, and then like he's like he offs this one. He's like, oh, brilliant. And then he turns around, and then the kitchen is full of them, and they're all like climbing up on the counters, and it's like something like out of like, you know, like Jurassic Park. You've got all the raptors, and
yeah,
you know,
it's so good.
Yeah, and he like then Reggie's like goes fucking full on badass after. Like, you know, like pistol whiffing, like shotgun butting this one guy to death. He then just like basically leaves the gas running, because obviously the romantic roaring fire is still going. He like fights his way out. He like climbs up
the laundry chute,
like beats up some more dwarf goblins, gets Michael, jumps through a fucking window, and the house explodes because he's left the gas on. And my God, this house explodes.
It explodes harder than the butt of a lady from Jaws 2.
Yes, exactly. Quite. That's what I would have said. It's like, I don't know, especially like now, like, I don't know, like a lot of like, you get a lot of explosions and stuff in films, but you know, like it's like a big CGI explosion or whatever. This was just like the pyro guy on this film, because there's quite a few explosions in it, and all the explosions are just that little bit more over the top than they need to be. Like, the guys were like, we probably want a bit more C4 in this. We probably want to put a few more sticks of dynamite on. And they're like, yeah, fuck it, whatever. When are we going to blow up another house again? And
oh, it's just 10 minutes from now.
Yeah,
apparently.
Yeah, like, but like, Reggie's house goes kablooey, but we see the tall man leave.
Yes, the tall man slinks away with his very sort of long stride.
And then we don't see Elizabeth again. She was there for a while.
So, the last we see of her, she's like written all of this down in her diary. This is sort of allows us to get to see it, basically, that she's writing it in her diary. And then we see the more recent pages, and she's drawing adult Mike with loads of hearts around him.
Yeah.
And her voiceover is going, I need you, Mike, I need you. I know that all this is true, and soon my grandfather will die, and the tall man will come for him. And maybe me.
Yeah, and it's weird because you're kind of like, wait, so has she actually met Mike? Has she actually met the tall man? Like, how does she know all this stuff? What is her deal? And it's left a little bit loose, but like...
They haven't. They just got a psychic link.
And she hasn't met the tall man either.
No.
She's just like... feels that like he's gonna get her.
Yes, exactly. She feels he's gonna get her. She knows. I mean, you know, everyone around her would think she's delusional. Then we cut to, at the end of this, Mike, adult Mike, played by a different actor, is in a psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
And he is talking to the doctor, being like, yes, I was delusional. So my brother did die. The tall man wasn't real. It was all a dream.
Yeah, sorry we blew up Reggie's house. And like you can hear in his voice, you can hear in his head that he's saying the stuff to the counsellor, and then his head's like, just tell him what he wants. We've got to get out of here. Like he's just lying to try and get out of the psych ward, and then goes to see Reggie.
He goes to see Reggie, and Reggie is like, it's confusing a little bit here whether or not Reggie thinks it was all a dream, or knows that the tall man is real. Because adult Mike now meets Reggie. Mike is digging up graves in the graveyard, and this is a really creepy moment. He's like, I've dug up three graves in this graveyard. They're all empty.
Yes.
And this is a cool idea that like every grave is secretly empty because the tall man's taken them all.
Mm.
And so here, Reggie, the ice cream man, just kind of seems to be like, okay, I guess the tall man is real then.
But he's had like extensive dealings with the tall man and his minions.
But
and
then
it's
he
not,
forgot it all.
It's like, did he forget it all, or did he just kind of like make, you know, he's just like, oh, I'm just going to like pretend that this went away because thinking that it didn't happen is easier than me admitting that this happened. It's weird.
Because he thought it was a dream, but then he did shotgun butt the goblin. So I guess...
Yeah, there was this whole... He had a whole extended fight scene where he was badass in a house and, like, you know, he went and touched the tuning fork and made the wind blow in the end of the first film.
Then he forgot all of that, and then he thought it was a dream.
Yeah.
But then the goblin came and he butted him again.
Yeah, but then they're driving home from the cemetery, and then...
He's like, oh, I can't wait to see Aunt Fanny. You're going to love Aunt Fanny. She's making a turkey. Yeah. She's such a sweet woman. Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to see my... I think he's like... He feels like he's got a wife and kids and stuff, like, by this point now. He's like, oh, I can't wait for, you know, like, little Jenny wants to meet her Uncle Michael and all this. Like, so we're going to go back to Reggie's family that he's established since Mike's been in the psychiatric ward. I like that he went and picked him up and just was like, straight away, right, we'll go to the cemetery, we'll go and dig up some lads, and then we'll go home because Aunt Fanny's got the turkey going. And then Michael gets like a psychic vision of the tall man going like, oh, I'm back, boy.
But hilariously, he seems to be like cooking because he's basically just turning on some dials on an oven.
Yeah.
But you know why he's turning on the dials on the oven?
Because he's magically turning on the dials on the oven in Reggie's house, because Reggie's house explodes!
It explodes again! For the second time in 10 minutes, Reggie's house explodes! So is this the same house? Did he rebuild it? Did he buy a new house and that one also exploded?
He's never going to get insurance on another house. That's all I can say.
He must be kicking himself. Like, oh, they tried to sell me explosion insurance. And I'm like, statistically, the chances of having two houses explode are low.
So this is like this kind of like emotional thing of like, oh no, Reggie's lost his family, but also we never even saw them.
I know. This is shades of, do you remember Myrtle from the first film where he goes home and there's just this woman there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, like, because it's kind of like, oh man, like, Reggie's, like, built this whole new life for himself, and then he loses that, and then he's like, okay, Michael, I'm with you, we're going to go and hunt down the tall man. You know, like, he's got something else to kind of, like, pull him into it. Now it's personal. But you just kind of feel like, maybe we should have just had that one scene where Reggie picks Michael up from the psych ward and then he goes over to the car and like his kid isn't, you know, something like that. Like, tug on the heartstrings. I want to feel for Mr. Whippy. Come on.
Well, instead, we don't get that in the build-up. Instead, we see the aftermath and we see Mr. Whippy's grieving process, which is that both him and Mike rock a seriously strong look that I like to call funeral shades.
Yeah, they look very kind of 80s Wall Street.
Yeah. They're both dressed like Gordon Gekko. They're at a funeral. They've got these huge shades that are like hanging off the sides of their heads. They've got slick back hair. And this is just how they're like suddenly like, oh no, this is my gritty reboot.
Yeah. It's like, my family are dead, now I'm cool. It's kind of like that. So they go like, family's dead, what should we do?
Road trip!
Yeah, but also, not just any road trip, Terminator road trip. The film suddenly drops like a load of fucking like Terminator shit. Like, you get this, they're driving through a desert, you've got the close-up of the lines painted on the roads, you know, going past as a a voiceover goes by of, like, I don't know if it's Reggie or Michael being like, yeah, we hit the road and we just followed the tracks of the tall man. He was going from town. Because apparently now, like, the tall man has left their town. It seemed like he was always just there, but now he's like a plague that's, like, sweeping the country, yeah, like, eating up towns.
He's franchising.
Exactly, stealing their dead. So you're kind of like, okay, cool. Well, this is all pretty Terminator-ish. And then they go and break into a hardware store and start tooling up and stuff like that. Like,
this is very early in the film for a tooling up montage, but I am here for it.
Yeah, no, like, this is what I really liked that with this film, that it whereas we've watched, like, other slashers, that it's kind of like, right, okay, all your disposable teenagers have been killed. Reboot, like, reset for the next one, and we'll just go through the motions of the different sets of characters. And even with, like, stories like some of, like, the Friday the 13th and Elm Street films, which bring back characters, none of them really kind of, like, pick up, like, the way that this one picks up, apart from, like, maybe, like, Friday 6.
Yeah.
You know, like, where you've got the Frankenstein bit at the beginning. With this, it just kind of, like, right, we've got the same characters, you know, like, big action piece. It's a much more action-y film. Like, there's a lot of, like, weapons and explosions and fights. And the other thing that this really reminded me of is Aliens.
Yes.
In that it's gone from, like, you know, like, this very, like, horror suspense-y kind of thing to a slightly more action-y tone, like, a little bit more gung-ho, a bit more bang-bang.
Yeah.
And I like it. I think it's, like, a cool switch-up of things. I like that these guys are taking shit into their own hands and they're, like, trying to hunt down the tall man. They've got, like, some real agency. They've got some gumption about them.
I also like, though, that they're slightly crap. And, like, in a good way, they know this. Like, there's a few little lines of, like, what are we going to do, man? I'm a 19-year-old kid and you're a middle-aged ice cream man.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, yeah, right, what are you going to do?
But at the same time, they're kind of badass because it's tooling up section. They're just like, right, massive fucking drill, hammers, chainsaws.
This gun, Tom, the gun.
Blowtorch. Oh, yeah, you know, they get, like, one shotgun and then they get another shotgun. So they just tape the two together and make a quadruple shot-barreled shotgun.
And then saw that off as well.
Yeah, it's perfect. Like, this whole bit is, like, when you're, you know, like, if you were a 13-year-old boy talking about, like, yeah, wouldn't this be cool in, like, a film if, you know, like, oh, they've got, you know, like, you've been playing Doom on the PC, yeah, and all this kind of shit, and you're just, like, trying to think of, like, gross stuff that people can do to kill people. This is kind of, like, setting up some, there's Chekhov's lots of weapons.
I'm going to say early on, though, it's not a super body county film. I can't really remember the first one.
I think it's not.
There's even probably fewer deaths, but the ones that we have are absolute rip snorters.
I don't remember there being, like, loads of deaths in the film, but yeah, like, this one is grisly. The shit that happens, you know, it's like, oh no. So we're gonna get to that. Weird things, like we said, like, there was, like, the Terminator style voiceovers,
yeah,
keeps on changing between Mike and Reggie, and we've also had voiceovers at the beginning for Liz, which seems like a filmmaking no-no.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
This film, people just try and narrate what is going on through any means they can, through a diary, through inner monologues, through speaking out loud. There is so much of just people talking to themselves to, like, be kind of like, and now I'm going to go into this room.
Yes.
Anyway, dead towns. They're following the tall man, all these, like, ice, these, like, boarded up towns.
There's
cool.
This great, great moment when they arrive in this completely deserted town and they're like, he's already been through here. Sometimes he lays his traps. We got to be careful. This town could be a trap. And they get to the graveyard and here the camera pans out and every single grave is open and empty.
Yeah, it's
and
cool.
And it's not that they're fresh, they're old graves, but they've all been, like, they're all, like, revealed to be empty. It's such a cool moment.
Yeah, and they're just, like, walking through, you know, like, tooled up with all their kind of, like, homebrew kind of, like, badass kit. And they're going snooping around the mortuary in this town. And this is kind of, like, a bit more suspense-y, and this is where it feels very aliens-y, like, because Michael's got, like, a blowtorch, so he's rocking that kind of like Ripley with a flamethrower thing.
Yes. And then they enter the mortuary, and Mike goes into the morgue, and it's all cool. There's like these red curtains and candles everywhere. When he gets to the morgue, there's a body left on the slab. This sort of a lady, a female corpse, with like the Y incision down her chest and all of that. Weirdly, I noted in the corner of the room there's just a toilet, like just in the corner of the morgue, like not behind a door or anything.
That's just how morticians do it, I guess. I mean, you know, she wasn't going to be looking, she's dead. Or is she?
Because when he turns around, the corpse is gone. Ruh-roh, where did she go?
And he doesn't really kind of freak out that much. He's a little bit, I don't know about this. And then Reggie's like, oh, come on, down here. They go into the fucking Nightmare on Elm Street style boiler room.
Yeah, and there's something in the corner of the room. And they approach, and it's a sort of a huddled figure under a black cloak. And it's making this strange sound. And they're like, who are you? Tell us who you are. We're a middle-aged ice cream man and a 19-year-old kid with a blowtorch. And they approach, and it sounds scared. The creature sounds scared. And they pull the hood back, and it's Liz from the start of the film that was doing the psychic monologue.
Yeah.
But she's got tape over her mouth.
And the important thing here, like, you know, we've said that Liz had these dreams. She's been dreaming of Michael. Michael has been dreaming of Liz. And the whole reason, partly while they're on the road, he's like, there's this girl, Reggie, I've got to go and find her. I've got to save her. You know, so they've kind of like have been meeting in their dreams.
Mm.
And so he recognizes her, and he's like, kind of like, hey, this is that girl. This is the girl. This is the girl. And untapes her mouth.
And then something starts to happen to her back.
Yeah, she's all huddled over and her back kind of starts pulsating and going all ooky. And then they're like, oh, no, I don't like the look of this. And they start to pull it back. And like she's got this pulsating, gross hunchback.
Yeah.
And then
her spine is alive and her spine like breaks away from the rest of her body.
And it's like something from The Thing.
Yes, it's really The Thingy. It's like thick and sticky, very fleshy, not bony. And it like emerges out of her back, and it's got a face, and it's the tall man's face. And I can't remember what he says, but it may as well be, fuck you.
Yeah, it's like, you play a good game, boy. Or something like that. And then Reggie goes, fucking bananas, and just blow torches the shit out of that.
Yes!
And then we're kind of like, so they've introduced Liz and she's just been fucked up already, and she has like some sort of spine goblin living inside her. And then through another bit, like the very next scene has a bit of monologue from Michael being like, the ghostly apparition looked like Liz, so he must know we're after her. And that was a little bit like, nah, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the fact that it was like, oh, it was a fake out, Liz, maybe like that would have still been cool if it had just been some other girl. Like, you know, it's like, oh, there's this one survivor here. And then this horrible fucking thing happens and that would still shit you up without it being like this kind of like slight fake out. That was the only thing that detracted from a fucking cool scene was the thing of like, it was like a whatever. It just wasn't real.
Yeah, it was a bit of a spooky dream, wasn't it?
But well, they like to do spooky dreams in Phantasm.
Yes. But then the very next scene, we see for ourselves that Liz is still alive. She's alive and well because her granddad, as she predicted, has passed away and she is attending his funeral.
Yeah, and she's all ooked out by this. The grandma is having a real tough time of it. The priest who is running the show is like drinking heavily, seems to be really freaking out. And it turns out like he knows that there's something bad going on in the town and bad going on with all the bodies.
Yes.
And so when everybody leaves, like Liz kind of goes off and she has a little bit of a walk around the mortuary, and the tall man, she sees the tall man in the flesh for the first time.
Mm.
And then, like, the grandma leaves. And so then, like, the priest gets out a fucking honking big knife. And he looks at Jesus on the cross and is like, I can't let this go on anymore in good conscience. And then he just, like, stabs grandpa.
Yeah, in the chest, like in the coffin.
Yeah, with this like massive, like fucking, like, you know, like it's like a Rambo knife. It's like the size of like your forearm.
Yes.
And then he turns around and the grandma's there and she's like, ooh! And then just faints.
Oh, my medication.
Yes, exactly.
As you would be. I mean, it's pretty grim.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we see the priest again later that night at his home, and he's drinking whiskey, and he's all worried because he knows that he's tried to turn against the tall man, and he's worried. And there's something at the door, and he goes to the door, and he's like, "Oh, it's just the wind. It's just the wind." Goes back to his desk. He drinks some more whiskey. There's the noise again, so he goes, "Damn this wind!" And he goes and he opens the door, and oh no, it's Grandpa Lipstitch.
Oh
the,
yeah,
the corpse that he tried to stab in the chest is now at the door with his lips all stitched up. And then we cut,
and then we're gonna go see the grandma,
and she's at home in bed being like, "Oh, my medication, like my husband died, that's real sad." And then there was that whole thing with the priest stabbing him in the chest, that was real sad as well. And then she rolls over in bed, and then Grandpa Lipstitch is there, and he's just like,
ookie stuff.
There's a lot of ookie dookie stuff
and
going
then,
on.
Yeah, and then like Liz is gonna find that grandma's gone, and she's gonna find this little kind of stabber.
It's like a hat pin, I
think. Like a hat pin with that kind of yellow custardy goo that we saw in the first film. And then she just hears in her head the tall man saying, I have them both. If you want them, come to the cemetery tonight.
Yes, yes. So there's a bit of a challenge has been laid down.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we see Reggie and Mike on the road, and they pick up a hitchhiker.
Yes.
A young girl named Alchemy. And Alchemy. Alchemy.
Alchemy. This is like the 80s. This isn't 2019. It's probably about three Alchemies at my daughter's nursery. But Michael has a dream about her and feels like he's seen her dead. And which is like, oh, isn't she? I was like, oh, isn't that the dead girl from the morgue?
Mm.
But he kind of, I don't know. She is, but it's not really clear if he actually believed that she was the dead girl from the morgue. Because he's like, I've dreamt of her, and in it she's dead. It's like, no, you didn't dream of her. You saw her, and she was dead. So I don't know if this is this whole thing where he is second-guessing the stuff that he sees.
I think the implication is that when he saw her in the morgue, that was a premonition. Because he says to Reggie, oh, I'm worried Mike is like, we shouldn't have picked her up as a hitchhiker. If she comes with us, then she's going to end up dying. I had a premonition of her dead.
Could be, because we do see her, like you said, with that Y-shaped scar, and that is not the last time that we see her without any clothes on in the film. And we see her later, she does not have that scar, so if she's reanimated, then she's healed miraculously. Anyway, they pick her up, she's along for the ride a little bit, don't worry about it too much right now.
Reggie makes it very, very clear that he wouldn't mind a piece.
Absolutely. And then where are we going now?
So we end up in the town of Perigord, Oregon. It's another ghost town. Alchemy wants to go there because her uncle lives there. He has a B&B. And she says, oh, we can all stay at my uncle's B&B. They turn up. Total ghost town.
Yep.
B&B's been abandoned. There's nobody around. Holy fuck. So they like leave Alchemy and her uncle's B&B and they like booby trap literally everything.
Yeah, they fucking home alone that shit.
They do home alone that shit, Thomas.
Yeah, but with like grenades and things like that.
Yeah.
Like grenades and shotguns aimed at doors. And during this time, Liz has gone to the mortuary in this town to go and confront the tall man.
Yes, because she wants her grandma back.
Ooh, not the way she is now. She's not.
No. And when she turns up at the mortuary, the priest, the worried priest, is also there. And
yeah.
He's like, oh no, because he knows he's crossed the tall man. That's what, like, Grandpa Lipstitch turned up. He was all this stuff. He's like, oh, shouldn't have done it. He's looking around and he goes to check this very tiny little sad little infant's coffin. You know, it's like genuinely, oh, I don't know, 9 inches long, top, something like that. He opens up this tiny little coffin and there's no little body in there. Oh, no, no, no. Inside are not one, not two, but three murder balls.
Yeah.
Three murder balls. Yes.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm like, oh, they upped the game on this one.
Yeah, they really did. And the tall man pops up and is like, you've been being all right, shit. And the priest is like, no, how dare you confront me? I'm a man of God. And the tall man is like, oh, God, do you really think you go to heaven where you when you die? You go to us. And then he, like, telepathically chokes the priest with the priest's own crucifix that he's got hanging around his neck, and he's like hanging in midair, suspended by an upside down crucifix.
Nice, pretty sick.
Yeah, and then he kind of drops him, and the priest runs away, and the tall man's like, the murder balls will get him in about 10 minutes.
Yes, and so the priest is running. He runs into Liz, and he's like, oh, you got to watch out. She's like, oh, I want to find my grandmother. He's like, your grandmother's gone. He's harvesting the whole town. And then that's when the ball shows up.
Oh, and it does show up indeed. So it comes flying around the corner. It's very reminiscent of the first film. We get that kind of murder ball predator vision thing. And instead of the two little prongs that pop out of it, out comes a little buzzsaw.
Yes!
And it fucking chops off the priest's ear, and his ear goes flying through the air, and he's like, nah, mate! Nah, I needed that! My glasses are going to fall off now. Fuck!
And then it really looks like it stings.
it's an ouchie. It's a real boo-boo. And the murder ball turns around. It's like, nah, now we're going to get the forks. We know what the people want. Biff, baff, bosh! Fork in the face, drill in the nose, blood coming out the fucking other end, falls on the floor. We don't see him piss himself, but we can only assume. And it's just as good the second time around as it was the first.
It's the same as in the first film, only this time they added a little amuse-bouche with buzzsaw on his ear off. And it's just good.
It's great. And then what could make that better? Tall man shows up, grabs Liz, hoys her into a wall. Pow!
Yeah, this bit where the tall man picks up Liz is just hilarious.
Throws her like a fucking rag doll.
She's on these, like, she's obviously, it's a bit of wire work, isn't it? They've, like, lifted her up with wires or something. And then he throws her, and she just sort of quite slowly glides through the air. And then, like, delicately bounces against the wall. Sort of gently falls back down again.
And then she gets attacked by her dwarf grandmother.
Yes! And it's really good! She's got the brown hood with the, like, pointed head. She's got her grandmother's face. And she's like, oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no!
Oh, no! And then grandmother's a midget! No!
And she runs outside. She falls in one of those many, many open graves. Who's also in that open grave? Mike, the Mike, man of her dreams.
Mike was there because during all of this stuff, they booby-trapped the house, and then it got set off because some little goblin-y guys came to try and go get him, and then they blew up the front door with a grenade, and then they were like, right, we'll go out, and they saw some people digging graves who Mike has dubbed gravers. They're like these like kind of hillbilly guys with gas masks on.
They've got a cool look.
Yeah, and he's like, I call them gravers.
I'm hoping it will catch on.
And then, like, for some reason, when Liz falls in the grave, Mike is wearing one of these gas masks. And then he just takes, and it's just for a reveal. So he goes, it's all right. It's not a graver. That's the thing I made up. I'm not a graver. I am Mike. You might remember me from those dreams that we've had. And then they just instantly start kissing.
Yeah.
And then instantly Reggie pops up and goes, hey, what's going on here? And it's just, a lot of stuff happens very quickly with Liz and Michael. It's because we haven't even really had that many scenes since the beginning. We've had like Liz say, oh, I have these dreams with Michael. And we've had Michael say, I have these dreams about Liz. But we haven't had like any like real scenes where like they're kind of we see them communicating through dreams in real time. It's all just them telling us, the audience, that that's a thing they do.
Yeah.
So when they do actually meet, it's kind of like, we're like, well, they're still kind of strangers as far as we're concerned. And then they're just like, nope, we're in Snogstown, USA.
And then as if to sort of prove the point of how hot and heavy it is to live in Snogsville, the very next shot is of Mike with his flamethrower in the living room, using the flamethrower to light the fire. And rather than everybody else be like, that is incredibly reckless and I am leaving, Liz is like, Pretty cool.
Yeah, everyone's just like, yeah, seemed reasonable. I mean, who needs matches when you can just like fucking like squat and just be like,
yeah,
get that.
And then they go to bed and Reggie and Alchemy are up. And I literally said to Tom, if anything actually happens between Reggie and Alchemy, that's going to be fucked up. And then
because Reggie is, I don't know, like twice her
he's
age.
Like post, he's north of 50. He's yeah. bald. He's a bit schlubby. Alchemy is what, 22?
At the most. It's at like waifish hippie girl.
Yeah.
So instantly, she gets a kit off.
I said to Tom, if anything happens, it's going to be fucked up. And then she initiates things.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, yep, yeah. Because like, it's quite creepy because like, oh yeah, like Liz and Michael go up to bed and like, oh, I'll let's all get some shut eye. I'll keep an eye on you. And then like, he like puts her hand, like Reggie puts his hand on her and it's like, and I'll watch over you. And I was like, oh, that's a deal breaker. That just sounds creepy. It's like, oh no, she's into it. It's fine. And then, oh man, then things get weird.
I got accidentally weirdly good at predicting like the fucked up things that are about to happen. Because then we see them in bed and she keeps like kissing Reggie's bald head, like kissing him on the head and like
slapping his head.
Slapping his head, rubbing his head between her breasts. And I turned to Tom and as a joke, I said, she loves his head. And then she says the line, I love your head.
And it seems like during all of this that she, that like they're actually boning down. He is fully clothed and she still has pants on. I know it's still possible, but it just is just improbable.
But this is how the first film kind of started. Do you remember? There was that weird sex scene.
Yeah,
the guy was doing nothing and the girl was like, yeah, I love this.
Yeah, well, still like at least partially clothed. Yeah, very, very odd stuff.
I don't know what Don Coscarelli's experiences have been like so far.
Yeah.
But he seems to think that women are easy to please.
Yeah, they love it with their pants on. I don't know. It was an odd, odd, odd scene. And then while all this hot, bald head slapping, bone down, dry hump is going on, you've got Michael and Liz who are lying next to each other and they just kind of turn round to each other and go like, hey, what's going on? We're dreaming.
They're having a psychic conversation without speaking out loud.
So we finally see this whole thing of them having like a psychic thing and like she's like Michael's like, hey, what's going on? How are we talking? Aren't you asleep? He's like, we're dreaming. And he's kind of like, wow, this is cool. It's like, but this is how you've met. This is how you know each other already. Like, why are you? I'm like amazed by this. And he's kind of like, this is amazing. We can talk to each other when we're in the same bed together. It's like, you've been doing that from across the fucking country.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I love you, Michael. And I'm like, just pump the brakes a little bit. It feels like you're going a little bit fast. And then like, oh,
Tall Man shows up.
Oh yeah, Tall Man.
Tall Man shows up.
Nabs Liz. Car explodes.
Yeah,
another big explosion.
Yeah, they're chasing after the car. There's a big crash. Reggie nearly dies, but then he doesn't, and the car explodes. Kaboom.
Yep. And then we're all off to save Liz. We're going to another mortuary.
Yeah, and so the Tall Man seems to have palmed Liz off on one of his minions, not a goblin minion, but like another sort of goth funeral director type bro.
Yeah, he's got her trussed up on a table and he's about to put her in like the cremation oven. Now, okay, we should just quickly say, why the fuck does the Tall Man want Liz?
And even if he does want her, why would he want to cremate her? Because he likes the bodies intact, right? So that he can goblin them.
So the whole kind of like the rewrite in this is that like the reason that they can talk to each other is because they're the only ones who can see what the Tall Man is doing. So it has a kind of slight... They add this kind of twist on the first film that, like, Mike is a bit of a chosen one and Liz is a bit of a chosen one. Like, Mike was just snooping around and he found what the Tall Man was doing. But now they've added this whole kind of psychic connection thing and that they're psychically connected because she's never even met the Tall... Before she even met the Tall Man, she knew what the Tall Man was doing. And it's pretty fucking loose. It's pretty fucking vague exactly what is going on there. I mean... am I wrong here? Is there something? Is there? Am I missing something? Like, it just seems like, oh, he doesn't like us because he just doesn't.
He doesn't like them because they're onto him. And yeah. They can rumble the whole deal.
They can rumble the whole deal, but apparently they're the only ones who know. But it just seems weird that obviously, like, Mike just knows because he just stumbled
so
on it.
I think that basically Liz is the only one that really has psychic powers. Basically, she has psychic powers just randomly and knows about the Tall Man. She has visions of the Tall Man. Now, because Mike stumbled across the Tall Man,
she's connected to him.
He features in those visions that she has. And because he features in those visions, she can hear his thoughts and he can hear her.
That would make sense as to why he's kind of like, what the fuck's going on? It's like, we're having a fucking psychic chat like we always do.
Yeah, I think the power comes from her, not from him.
Okay, cool. So then the Tall Man doesn't want that, so he's going to get his mate to chuck her in the oven.
And there's quite a cool bit where Tall Man's mate is like, he's got to clean out the dust trap in the cremation machine from the last person he burned. And he gets out all the ashes and there's like little bits of bone in there. So he smashes those with a hammer and he's like, right, got to file these ashes away in the right place. And he puts them in a little baggie. In the baggie, there's like a sticker with a name and address on it. And the name is Sam Raimi.
Hey all, Easter egg, nice.
Nice.
And then, so basically Liz has a bit of scrap with him.
Yeah, the easiest escape ever. So he puts her on like a little rolling conveyor belt, like you get a Yo Sushi, to like lead her into the cremating machine. And she just
rolls off it.
She just rolls slightly to one side, rolls off it. And then Goth Boy is like, no, wait, come back here. And stumbles onto the Yo Sushi conveyor himself. And he doesn't think to roll off it, even though he saw her do it. He's like, it will never work a second time.
He's just picked up too much momentum.
And he just goes, whoa, into the machine. She slams the door and there's a fucking brutal bit where you just see his burning hands slam up against the window, go, no! And it's like you can already see the bone and the flesh falling away. It's pretty raw.
It's good. It's good and grisly. While this is going on, we've got Mike and Mr. Whippy. They're on their way to... They're in. They're trying to, like, track Liz down. They find the Tall Man's embalming gear where it's, like, for, like, sucking out the blood... And putting in, I don't know, I guess what would be chloroform, but
embalming fluid.
Embalming fluid, but it's maybe it's like some sort of ooky, spooky shit that turns you into like a little goblin person. But then Reggie gets like a big vat of like hydrochloric acid and pours it in there. And he's like, yeah, try embalming someone with this motherfucker. This is Chekhov's acid I'm pouring.
Yeah, that's pretty banging.
And they split up. So Reggie goes snooping in a basement.
Seems like a good place to snoop. It's
good, and he finds a Graver. Hey, it's catching on. And
then Reggie's like, fuck you, Graver, I've got a chainsaw.
Yeah,
and then Graver pulls out an even bigger chainsaw.
It's really funny. Like, there's not so many funny bits, I think, in this film, but this bit is like really played for laughs and like really works. And then they just have like a really cool kind of like chainsaw fight, and the Graver gets killed when Reggie chainsaws him in the peen.
Yeah. There's some pretty brutal bits. He like overcomes him briefly by like getting a power drill and sticking it in the Graver's armpit, like up into armpit, and it looks really painful. But then the Graver keeps coming. And then, yes, Reggie does the old chainsaw between the legs in the peen. Good night, nurse.
And then we've got Liz meets up with Michael, and then another spooky mortuary guy comes out and tries to get him, but oh no, there's a murder ball. There's a murder ball. And then like they duck, the murder ball gets this the Tall Man's goon in the hand, bosh, gets his hand stuck against the wall. He's like, oh no, my hand, oh, I need that for picking stuff up. And then another murder ball comes around.
And this one's gold!
It's a gold murder ball. And the guy who's got his hand stuck, he's like, well, fuck this for a laugh. He pulls out an axe, chops off his own hand, does a runner. And then you've got Mike and Liz being chased by this gold murder ball, which is just like Oh, it's a hard murder ball because it just like basically blasts through doors. They keep on like closing doors on it and it just goes bosh, fuck that. Nah, bosh. Even they close a big metal door and it has like a laser in it and it starts melting the door and then it's like bosh, I'm going to come out and get you. The guy chopped his own hand off. He pops up. He's like, ah, you thought I was dead, but I've only got one hand now. I'm going to try and kill you. But then the murder ball gets him. Oh, fuck me though. It's raw what happens to this dude.
The way that this happens, man, it's so wonderful. It surpasses like some of the best bits from the first film. So like the circumference of the ball gets these little sort of stegosaurus spikes, these little triangular blades, which then kind of flip upwards all in the same direction, kind of like teeth. And then the top half of that ball spins and spins and spins around through the goth bro's back, through his spine, and he's like, oh my god, it's drilling into my back, that's quite painful, and then the camera looks down and we see that it's like forcing its way out, like his stomach, we see his stomach bulging out, and I'm like, oh, it's going to be like an alien, like chest burster thing. But then no, it changes direction, and it starts going up through his chest, and we see his neck swelling.
And it's throwing it, while this is happening, it's fucking throwing him around the room, he is lurching around, it looks like he's having a very unpleasant time.
Yeah, so we get little hints. It's in his neck. So we've had like little hints of alien with the chest burster thing. Then at this point, we've got hints of the Nightmare on Elm Street gravity room because it's like lifting him up onto the ceiling. Yeah. And it's like, oh my god, it's so painful. It goes on for ages. It goes on for so long, and then it just stops, and he falls in a heap, and everything's quiet, and they start to approach him. And at this point, I'm like, ooh, so the bit with the spine monster before, was that a callback to this? Are they going to like touch him and then the thing's going to come out of his spine and it's going to be like that? Nah, man. They turn him over and the ball has forced its way like out of his mouth. But these spikes are like through his top lip, his bottom lip, his side cheeks. It's like he tried to eat like
a blender.
Like he ate a blender backwards.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god.
And it's just there, just going like, and it's like, oh fuck. There are just moments in this film, like the grisly bits are really grisly. And you just kind of watch it and just go like, oh shit. It's kind of like, you know, you're there and you drop whatever you're holding in your hand and just kind of go like, oh wow. Oh wow, they did a thing.
I'm glad I'm not him.
And then we're going to cut back very briefly after Reggie has killed that graver with the chainsaw to the peen, because most importantly, we finally get to see the quadruple barrel shotgun get used, because a bunch of little gobliny guys pop up in their dressing gowns and they all line up really nicely in a line so that he can shoot them all simultaneously. Bosh! They're all done. Checked off the list. We've had the chainsaw, we've had the drill, we've had the flamethrower, and we've had the quadruple shotgun.
Yes.
So
we're hitting all the beats, because the very next scene is we get a return to the tuning fork room, the big loud tuning fork room.
They find the tuning fork room. They have to get one of the murder balls that was stuck in the wall in that guy's hand. They use it as a key to get into the tuning fork room and like have a look at what's going on. We get to see inside one of
the little barrels,
which has got a little goblin cooking in it. That's pretty cool. They're in there like going and then Michael's kind of like, hey Liz, come check this out. Sticks his hand in between the two tuning forks, and you can see it's a portal. The effect feels a little bit more janky in this film, but it's fine. You know, like in a film with like improved effects, that one is less, but it's cool. But then Tall Man shows up and he's gonna start kicking fucking ass,
and he boshes Mike and Reggie through the portal into the planet, and not as much as we'd liked, but we get a pretty decent glimpse of the Tall Man's planet.
Arrakis, Dune,
yes.
Desert planet, we're there.
It basically looks like Brighton Beach with a red filter.
It's very pebbly. And it's cool, like when they're there, they're all like fucked up because apparently the gravity there is like a lot stronger and that's what's making the people small. And one of the little cans is knocked over and a really slimy little gobliny dwarf guy comes out and is trying to get Reggie, and it's like, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna give you a big kiss, and Reggie's like, no, pull me out, the gravity is making my voice go weird, and he gets out, it's fine, and that's it, that's all we get. of the planet. It's not a lot more than we'd had originally. There are no answers in this film. There are only more questions as to what the fuck is up with the tall man. But it's cool. It's cool stuff. I'm glad they didn't kind of like retcon it and try and like change it and be like, oh, that's a bit...
He's a ghost now.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's still like some weird alien shit. But they get out and they're going to go fight the tall man some more. And it's pretty cool. How are they going to kill him?
Right, so I think what happens is... Liz still has the murder ball that they'd used as the key. And she like slams it into his head and it does the drill thing, right?
Yeah.
And we see like instead of it like spewing out all the blood like it normally does, it spews out like the bird's yellow banana custard pudding
stuff that
the aliens bleed. He doesn't give a fuck, mate. Don't phase him.
He looks like he's like, oh, don't fancy this. Then it comes off and then he's just like, yeah, it's all right. I've got a hole in my head. And you know what? There's a fucking little wormy thing in there.
A little sort of scorpion pincer comes out, which I'm assuming is like a bit of a glimpse of what he's really like.
Yeah.
Because he's an alien,
and
right?
And it tries to start eating Michael.
Yeah.
And then Michael grabs it and he pulls it. He tries to pull it out. And then
snaps it off like a crab claw.
Yeah. And the tall man's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care about that. But then we get... because he'd been trying to embalm Liz. He'd been trying to stab Liz with like the embalming thing, which had the Chekhov's hydrochloric acid.
Yeah.
But then she comes up behind him, boshes that in the neck. Reggie cranks it on, and then he starts filling up with hydrochloric acid from the inside out. Oh, that doesn't look as good. Like a murder ball to the head, he's fine. Filling up with acid. Not so much.
And he just starts
melting.
It's hideous from the inside out. It all like comes out his neck. There's this horrible bit where, because it's in his veins.
Yeah,
he's got
it
in his veins. Whereas like his hand just like shears away.
Yeah.
Like all like wet paper on a washing line or something. It's just like, phoomph. It's grim.
Yeah, so he basically melts from hydrochloric acid and then Reggie burns the room with the flamethrower because he's like, it's like in that film Aliens that we saw.
Yeah, fuck him up.
Yeah.
Game over, man.
Game over. And then they run out the house and...
Alchemy's there.
And Alchemy was also there.
Remember her?
She had tried to escape town and then had found the tall man's hearse at the side of the road and so she's nicked it. And so then they're all driving off in that.
The atmosphere is jubilant. They're very happy.
You've got Liz and Mike in the back with a coffin. They check the coffin. It's empty. Like, yeah, it's great. And then Alchemy, they have like a little privacy kind of screen that goes up in the hearse. And then you've got Reggie and Alchemy in the front. And it's like, oh, okay, we're going to be sexy. Nah, she's fucking evil. Remember, she was a fucking dead body earlier on in the film.
She wanted to fuck Reggie willingly, of course. Of course there's something wrong with her.
Because she like kind of brushes her hair and just like a chunk of her scalp falls away. And she's like, ho, 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 ho. And then you just hear Reggie going, oh, fucking hell, getting murdered in the front of the car. You've got the kids in the back. They're freaking out like, oh no, Reggie. Reggie comes, he's out at the back of the car. He's against the window. He's all covered in blood and gore. And like, no, not Reggie. You don't have Reggie be dead. That's not good.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's no way Reggie's dead. There is no way Reggie's dead. But Reggie's dead.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he could come back. I don't know. But then we've got Mike and Liz. And Liz is like, it's a dream. It's all a dream. And they're both there in the back of the car trying to convince each other it's a dream because they're having all this weird, was it real, was it not, dream stuff. It's all a dream. It's all a dream. And then, boom, the privacy mirror and the hearse goes down and it's the tall man and he's back and his face is okay. He's like,
no, it's not.
Cut. Credits.
That's it. So we've had another, like, jump scare, did they all die at the end moment.
Well, it feels to me, like, I like the ending. It's like the exact opposite, kind of what the previous ending was. Because the previous ending was this element of what was
spinning
a dream,
around,
what was
on
spinning out. Whereas this is just like, we're going to do something that's so horrible and shocking that you would expect them to like retcon
it's a dream,
it,
no.
It. And they're like, nah, this is real. We've really done this. Reggie's really dead.
Well, I don't know. Will he be? Because I don't know. It feels like they've got to carry on going with Michael. They've got to carry on going with these characters. Like, I mean, even if Reggie's dead, Michael and Liz have surely got to get away. You know, like, they've got to get away. Right?
Well, that remains to be seen.
Who else
is going to
stand up to the doorman?
So the next film is going to be Phantasm III, Lord of the Dead.
Nice.
Dance then, wherever
you Yes, I was going there as well. Is Michael Flatley going to be in it?
So that's 1994, so a mere 6 years later.
Okay, but I mean, what a jump culturally.
Yeah, huge difference between 88 and 94, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so what do you want to see from Lord of the Dead?
I don't know. Like, I think it's the same as what it was in the last one because, you know, we've seen some cool stuff. There's a lot of cool visual stuff going on. But not a lot more hints in this as to the lore. Mm. Like, we've seen a bit more of the little goblin people, but we don't know anything much more about them. We've seen a little bit more of the planet, but we don't know anything more about it. We've been introduced to the Gravers, who are, and like, there's more minions. You know, we know that the tall man just can, like, regenerate after all this kind of shit. He's got some kind of little crab lizard living in his head. So there's more questions than answers. So, I, you know, like, a bit more about what's his deal. Like, yeah. You know, I like that there's mystery. And I really hope that it's going somewhere because we know that this is a franchise. That I really hope that there was almost kind of like, there's a plan and we're teasing it out over films.
Yeah.
And that we're building to something that hopefully the filmmakers have, like, you know, like, they've had it there all along, and this isn't just random stuff that they're just throwing on screen and then figuring out as we go along. I would like to believe that there's, like, a bit more, you know, like, because it's so vivid and weird.
Yeah.
I like to feel like we're heading for something.
Well, yeah, I agree with you, because had I gone to the cinema to see this in 1988 and walked out of the movies with that ending, the first thing I would have said is, I am 5 years old. This is way too an adult film for me to have seen. Who let this happen?
Yes.
Child services need to be called. This was horrific. Why?
But once you get over that.
Once you get over that, I would have also said, but I need more. Like, I need more.
Yeah.
Because that's a really affecting ending. But it's, as you say, it's an ending that begs more questions than it answers.
Yeah, I think this, like, the whole thing of, like, what the tall man is it's more than, like, you know, Freddy Krueger. You know what Freddy Krueger is. They've established it right at the very beginning of the first film.
I feel like I know what the tall man is, though. He's just he's an alien.
He's an alien.
Probably looks like some sort of crab lizard. He's walking around inside a human suit.
Yeah, like, you kind of get it, but you just, I don't know. Like, I think I just kind of want to know, like, just, like, a little glimpse inside the tall man's motivations. Because obviously he's, like, sweeping the country and amassing an army of little guys.
Yeah.
To what end? To just go around amassing more little,
well,
they ship
them back. They ship them back to his planet and use them as slaves.
Exactly. Well, this is the thing. Like, what? I just want a little more glimpse into, you know, what, you know, who is the tall man? Does he puts on his trousers one leg at a time like the rest of
what
us?
Gets him up in the morning.
Exactly. You know, that's what I want. I want, like, you know, like, a through the keyhole with the tall man.
You know what? I really do not think this would happen. But you know what would be super cool in one of these films is if they introduced the tall woman. And she turned out to be, like, maybe his boss and was sent to Earth and was like, we hear that you're fucking up a bit on Earth and the ice cream men keep fucking with your shiz. So I've been sent to, like, check on you. And he's like, ugh. And everything he does, she's like, oh, that's not regulation.
Yeah, but then they find love.
Yes.
And they passionately kiss with, like, weird snake tentacle. The tall man, I just remember the tall man's eyeballs exploded while he was dying.
Has he gonna get those back? But he had them back.
He had them back, but they kissed with their little snake things coming out of their eyeballs to the sounds of Je T'aime by Serge Gainsbourg. Would just be perfect. I hope that happens in 3.
Well, we can only hope, Thomas. Yeah. I hope that you, the listeners, have enjoyed listening to me and Tom's delusions of a deranged mind, a spirit, a phantom, a ghost, phantasm.
But they're aliens.
A woman. I would absolutely buy an aftershave called Phantasm.
Oh, and the murder ball is like a perfect, like, you know, yes! Like, have the glass murder ball with a little... excuse me, sir. Could I interest you in Phantasm? Oh, no, there's perfume coming out of my face, though. Yeah.
So, yes, until then, join us, won't you, to hear me and Tom's thoughts about Phantasm 3, Lord of the Dead. Until then, I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. And I love your head.